Okay, so I have a couple of questions for you. I did this in the first service, and evidently I didn't really pick the people that you think of the founding members of your communities. And so I was trying to talk about John Work. Do you know that name? No, none of you do. So who are the founding members of, when you think back of who started Colville, is it Hofstetter? One of them, okay. Give me some other name that you think of as your founding. I'm not a local. No, because John, no. Wynn, who changed the name of the town to Colville so it could be the county seat from what he had been planning. Yeah. Colville, John Work was the man who founded Fort Colville. How about that? Well, where I'm from, the names they think of, I mean, in Richland itself, Richland had never really been around long enough to have that, but we still had the stories of the founders of the town from the people that had heard it because, you know, they founded Richland in 1941, and so that wasn't that long ago. But in southeastern Washington, they talk about Marcus Whitman. Right? That Marcus Whitman was the missionary that started there, he and Narcissa. And then also they talk about Chief Joseph, and many people don't know that story, but he protected the territorial governor during a wartime thing. In the same way, when we think about our founding, founders of our community, do the names Washington and Jefferson mean anything to us as founders of America? Or maybe if I started off by saying, 67 years ago today, we know that now you're talking about Lincoln. Right. Yeah. Well, the stories that are the backdrop of what I'm going to read today are just exactly that, the founding stories of the area where Jesus is talking. So when we get to this story, one was read today. My wife read you the story of the widow of Zarephath and what Elijah had done. Literally, the reason I go back to the story of Zarephath, which I did preach earlier this year, was that Elijah did it, and they're in the northern kingdom, and Elijah is really the founding father of their faith, because they got sort of severed from the lower kingdom, and while they mention Abraham, they really think Elijah is the one who did this. And this is what he did. And this word language is exactly the same in the Greek, for it is what it is in the Septuagint. And he presented her son to him alive. And the woman said, "Now I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Lord is in your mouth." Okay. Do you know what the Septuagint is? Is that weird Bible language for Bible geeks like myself and things like that? How many of you have a study Bible? And sometimes it has a little note, and it goes down in the Bible, and then it has this weird thing, LXX. And then it'll say, says, something slightly different or something like that. Whenever you see capital L, capital X, capital X, that's the Septuagint, which was the Hebrew Bible translated to Greek about 300 years before Jesus was born. And for our readers, and for Paul, that was the Greek Bible to them, right? That was the thing. And so when you see that, there's your little fiction and fact from Sam's Almanac for the day. We might do some others, but that's it. But so when they do that, they hear that. There's another story that I want to go back to because it's not just Elijah. It's Elisha that is the founder of their thing. Remember, he's the successor of Elijah, who asked for a double portion of his spirit. And this is the story here of Naaman. Do you know the story of Naaman? I'm going to read it to you anyway, so if you don't. Okay, so Naaman was a general from a foreign land, really in a lot of ways, an on-again, off-again enemy of the kingdom of Israel, and he was a leper, which, by the way, was just as curable in their day as dying. nobody was ever cured of leprosy. That's why when Jesus heals a leper, it's such a big deal that he says, go tell the priests and have them go through the rites to make you clean from leprosy, because they have all these rites that they practice all the time, but they never, ever get to use them. And it becomes a witness to the establishment of the religion that somebody actually was healed from leprosy. Well, so his king wrote a letter to the king of Israel and said, you have a prophet, heal this man for me. Now, you may not know this, but in a society where it's really a client-patron sort of society, the king is often seen as the benefactor of the community, the one that heals, the one that takes care of, the one that protects, all those things. There's stories of the Caesars being the benefactor and healing the ills of their country. And so he says, you take care of this for me. And the king of Israel says, what am I, God, to call somebody alive or clean or anything like that? Because the Israel idea is different. But into this comes Elisha, the man of God, that heard the king of Israel had torn his clothes and sent to the king saying, why have you torn your clothes? Let him, Naaman, come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. Then Naaman went with his horses and chariot, and he stood at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and your flesh will be restored to you, and you shall be clean. But Naaman was furious, and he went away. Indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come out and stand and call on the name of the Lord and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy. What did Naaman want? Well, first off, he wanted Elisha to come out and make some big scene. And Elisha sent somebody out and said, just tell the man to go dip in the river 7 times. Are not the Abna and the Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I have not washed in them and been clean? So he turned away in a rage. And the servant came near and spoke to him and said, my father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you have done it? You know, it's sort of like the doctor. Have you ever been to the doctor and they said, well, just go home and sleep it off? I want meds. Right? I want something bigger. I want like a 5-day course of meds. Just go sleep it off. Would you not have done it? How much more then when he says, go wash and be clean? So he went down and dipped 7 times in the Jordan according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. And he returned to the man of God, he and all his aides, and he came and stood before him, and he said, indeed, now I know there is no God in all the earth except in Israel. That's a big deal, isn't it? He didn't say, there's a God in Israel. He said, there isn't one anywhere else but Israel. That's a big deal. And so it's into this backdrop that these are the founding moments of faith for the people that are going to hear and see what Jesus is about to do. And Jesus and Luke specifically quotes both of those from the Septuagint. And so why I read them. Here it is. When Jesus had finished saying all these things to the people of Capernaum, which is what I've been preaching about the last couple of weeks, at the time, a highly valued slave of the Roman officer was sick and near death. When the officer heard about Jesus, he sent some respected Jewish elders to ask him to come and heal his slave. So they earnestly begged Jesus to help the man. If anyone deserves your help, he does. He loves the Jewish people and even built a synagogue for us. So Jesus went with them. But just before they arrived at the house, the officer sent some friends to say, Lord, don't trouble yourself by coming to my home, for I'm not worthy to have such an honor. Now, I need to interrupt you just a little bit, because in a client-patron society, if he were even second in command in Rome and he needed Caesar's attention, he would send a messenger and say, don't trouble yourself so much, but I need to see you. but I'm not worthy to have you come into my home. That is how big the client patron sort of language is. And his benefactor is Rome, not God. And so he's switching allegiances here and saying the things he shouldn't say to other people. Just want you to hear that. For I'm not worthy of such an honor. I'm not even worthy to come and meet you. Just say the word from where you are, and my servant will be healed. I know this because I am under authority of my superior officers, and I have authority over my soldiers. I only need say, go, and they go, and come, and they come. And if I say to my slaves, do this, they do it. When Jesus heard this, he was amazed, turning to the crowd that was following him, and he said, I tell you, I haven't seen faith like this in all Israel. And when the officer's friends returned to his house, they found the slave completely healed. Okay, I'm going to stop there for a second, and I'm going to talk about this. This is a wonder, but I'm not going to talk about the wonder that you think I'm going to talk about. Because you think I'm going to talk about healing as a wonder, and it is. Isn't it? It's a wonder. I too have had moments of bodily healing and things like that. It is a wonder, but it is not nearly as big a wonder as anybody who speaks out of faith in God. You, if you have faith in God, you are a wonder. And here's how big this wonder is. And I've talked about this in the past, that I've had a lot of experience street witnessing. I'm going to say this very plainly. I have never converted anybody. Do you know why I've never converted anybody? Because I'm a human being and I don't have the power to do it. Now, I've been near a lot of people that came to faith and were converted in my presence. God did it. Period. He's the only one that can convert. By the way, just a little aside, if you're witnessing to somebody and they don't come to faith, we often walk away ourselves going, I really blew that. He should have come to faith, or she should have come to faith. If God's the only one that can do it, he's the only one that cannot do it. And if it doesn't happen, you don't get any more blame than you get credit. But once you are here, you're in faith, you are a wonder. You are a work of God in faith. Because faith is a work of God in your life. And if it's in your life, then the life of God has been poured into him, and you are a wonder. I know you don't feel like you're a wonder. You sort of feel like you're kind of, you know, it's sort of like feeling like you're a grape when you come out of a raisin box. Right? I know I'm supposed to be God's power and I'm supposed to be his representative, but I'm just me. And I'm not all that special. And I'll mess it up if I talk about God. Do any of you, can I get a witness to that? Is that the way you feel about yourself? I'm just me and I'm not really God's servant on earth. And no, he looks at you and you go, that's my kid. I want everybody to see my kid, because when they see my kid, they'll see my work. Now, how do they do that? First off, I want to tell you something. You have something that I don't have. You have something that the Apostle Paul didn't have. You have the work of God in you. Now, I have something you don't have. I have the work of God in me. And that means that I have something that I can talk about with somebody that nobody else can contradict, and they can't do it right. You're the only one that can talk about what God's done for you right. Now, everything else is gossiping. If I talk about the work of God in you, I'm kind of gossiping. Now, the problem with gossiping is it's not always praise, is it? Or as I've been trying to repeat over and over, gossiping is the art of confessing somebody else's sins. Sorry. That's a hard word too. But here it is. You are a wonder, and you can share the work of God in your life, and there isn't any contradicting it. Now, it might be that you've misinterpreted it, but you still have the work of God in your life, and because of that, you are a wonder. And you may have been healed, but you were a wonder because of the faith, and the healing is just icing on the cake. It really is. Now, when you're in the midst of the struggle, it doesn't feel like icing on the cake. It feels like it's everything. I'm not discounting that, but I want you to understand what faith is and when it's been wrought in you, how big a deal it is. Never in all of Israel have I heard such faith. Here he is. I'm not even worthy to have you in my house, but if you just say the word. Did you notice that Jesus didn't actually just say the word? He just said, I've not seen this faith, and he walked away, and it was done. That's, by the way, a little more than a double portion of the Isaiah moment, who had to cry out to God and stretch over the kid three times and then, please, Lord, save this kid. Well, just, it's done. So here's the next wonder. I'm ready now. Are you? This is verse 11. Soon afterward, Jesus went with his disciples to the village of Nain, and a large crowd followed him, and a funeral procession was coming out as he approached the village gate, and a young man who had died was a widow's only son. I need to talk about this, and I don't want to make the mistake I made in the first service by saying this way, because I made an inaccurate statement when I said that without a husband and a son, she didn't have anybody to bring home the bacon. But they're Jewish and they don't do bacon. I'm just admitting it, right? I blew that one. But they're in this situation. When you live in a culture where men own property and sons own property and you're a widow and you have one son and the son dies, you're in trouble. Even if the law of the land says, take care of the widows and orphans, did they really do it? Not quite as well as you might think or hope. Did they leave the gleanings in the end? No, they didn't really do that. They tried. Some of them did. But here it is. So I want you to get that she's in not only the grieving of a son and a husband, but she's in dire financial straits. When the Lord saw her, his heart overflowed with compassion. You don't have a God who is untouched by what happens in our lives. You don't have a God. This is the second wonder at work here. You have a God who is touched by what's going on and at work behind the scenes, and every so often becomes visible. And this is what he does. Don't cry, he said, and he walked over to the boy, and he touched him, and the bearer stopped. Young man, he said, I tell you, get up. And then the dead boy sat up and began to talk, and Jesus presented him back to his mother alive. Exactly the language from Elijah. Great fear swept the crowd, and they praised God, saying, a mighty prophet has risen among us, and God has visited his people. You don't have an impassive, immovable God who's a force over there that can be slight. You know, he just set the world at work and he's not involved. You've got a God. The first wonder is that you were chosen and he worked in your life. And the second wonder is that he works in the lives of people and he's involved and he's not immovable. He's active. That is a wonder. And your witness is that he has been at work in your life and that you've been changed. Wonder upon wonders, amazing. This is beyond anything that we can think of. And yet, we sit there and we kind of hide our story because we're a little worried about speaking in public. How many of you are worried about speaking in public? Pastor, I don't want to speak up. Pastor Dave might ask me to preach someday if he knows I can do that, and I'm not going to admit that, and I don't want to be there, and so I'm not ever going to. Too late, Bill. Thank you for raising your hand in that spot, though. No, I had my class the other day. I'm taking Spanish over the college, and all the kids in the class are younger than my daughter, except for me. It's super fun. Anyway, but they were having to make a public presentation in Spanish, and there were three of them. You could see the stricken look of terror on their face. It wasn't really public because there's only 13 people in the room, but that's public enough for most. Are you in that spot where you would rather die than speak in front of people? Because that's the number one position of American people, is the number one fear is public speaking, not dying. I don't get it. So I talked to the professor and I said to her, I said, you know, I have this little statement that I say to people that are going to talk in front, especially eulogy speakers or things like that, to sort of calm their nerves and help them know why they're up there. And your pastor is nervous every Sunday. Did you know that? I'm not nervous about people. I'm nervous about representing God properly. Would you be nervous about that? Okay, do you know what that means I am? I'm nervous. It means I'm healthy. If I wasn't nervous about that, then you should be concerned. That would mean I wasn't healthy. When we care about things, our nerves come in and say, this matters. And so I said this to the class. Anyway, some of them calmed down. You could see them calm down. The other side about it is it's pretty friendly audience, especially for like a eulogy speaker. If you're a eulogy speaker, there isn't a person in the room out there going, I really hope they blow this. I would really like to see them not be able to make it through. There's none of that. It's a friendly audience. And so if you think it's a scary audience or an unfriendly audience, then that will affect you. And so I gave this little talk. And now I've got a couple of other friends in the room that said, oh, he's a real person. He cares about us. You don't know how God's going to give you a chance to speak about your faith, that then they will know that God has visited his people. The wonder of wonders. God is involved in human affairs. And he's been involved in your life. You've become part of gospelized humanity, where the gospel has touched your life and begun to take root and change you and do this. You don't have any idea how it's going to work. In my Bible study Wednesday night, we've been talking about grocery store English. Have you ever bonked somebody's grocery cart in the grocery store, and then suddenly you were in a conversation with somebody you didn't really know? Who knows what that's about? Here's one that I love this example because it was with one of my friends from St. John. I was there playing a golf tournament, and I was having a day, right? I had hit almost every tree on the course. I was having a day. And every time I hit the tree, the ball would bounce out into the fairway in the middle. I know there's some golfers here. Does that always happen? No. It usually drops directly behind the tree, so you have no shot. I hit one. Mr. Snappy, I call him, had visited my thing, and the ball did this, and it hit a rock, and it went 75 yards out into the fairway along the thing. We didn't even know where to look for it. Well, one of the guys I'm golfing with goes, well, of course he gets the good bounces. He's God's person. Okay? So this is an opportunity to speak about faith in a moment. Well, I do have a relationship with the guy who's in charge of the bounces. You could work on your relationship with him too. You don't know how big the door is open. You don't know what seeds need to be planted in people's lives. You don't know the effect of the little kindnesses you do. You don't know the effect of letting somebody get in front of you in the line. You don't know the effect of asking if you can pray for somebody and then actually praying for them. You don't know, except for one thing. God has visited his people. And because he's done that, you're a wonder to the world. You. Not just the guy that can stand up front, but you. You have faith to share, and you have a faith story to tell because God has visited his people, and those are the wonder of wonders. All he's asking you to do is when he opens the door, that you'd walk through that door and say whatever it is. And you can't mess up the conversion experience of somebody else. You can't. Because you can't make it happen. You can't make it not happen. Only God does that. Now, I know that's news to you. You think you can mess up somebody else's faith. Like you could mess up their day. Hate to tell you this, but nobody can mess up your day without your permission. You're in charge of that, just as they are in charge of it. So you are a wonder because God has visited his people, which is a wonder we're hoping to spread. Wouldn't it be nice to be nearby when God changed somebody's life? And they might say, God has visited his people. Will you pray with me? Lord Jesus, I thank you for today. Thank you for the chance to speak your words and have an effect, or to strengthen somebody else's understanding, or to just say, thank you, God. You are a wonder. And so we say, thank you, Lord. Amen.